Hello and welcome to the Gate Theatre's podcast series. My name is Selina Cartmell and I am the Artistic Director of the Gate Theatre. This is the first of a new podcast initiative that we will be producing over the coming months, hosting a diverse and I hope exciting range of discussions with leading artists, thinkers and exciting idea makers. Today's podcast is super exciting as it marks the Gate's first ever podcast, and I'm delighted to be in conversation with theatre director Katrina McLaughlin, a brilliant freelance theatre maker who has worked here in Ireland and internationally, and most recently she has just been announced as the new artistic director of the Abbey Theatre. Before Katrina starts at the Abbey in May, I'm thrilled that she will be making her Gate stage directing debut with the world premiere of The Visiting Hour by Frank McGuinness, that we will be streaming from the Gate Theatre on the 22nd, 23rd and 24th of April at 7:30 p.m. Welcome, Katrina, to the Gate Theatre podcast.
Thanks, Selina. How are you?
I'm very well. And congratulations on the Abbey position. I'm so totally thrilled for you.
I'm very excited. It's a great privilege, and I'm really excited. I haven't started yet, as you know, so I'm kind of delaying engaging with it too much until I begin in May. So at this point, it's all excitement.
I'm sure. I'm itching to ask, what has it been like the last few months with the whirlwind that has been, and what has kept you grounded?
I suppose really it's the fact that I know that, you know, there are any number of other people who could have that role. I feel very lucky that I was in the right place at the right time with the right set of experience. And I suppose it's just remembering the opportunity to work with all our colleagues in the industry and feeling a great responsibility. I mean, the Abbey, the National Theatre, has such a responsibility. The role of the National for Theatre, I think that nothing could be more grounding than that.
There's a great quote that at Joe Biden's inauguration by Amanda Gorman, who said, "There is always light, if only we are brave enough to see it, if only we are brave enough to be it." From my point of view, I think making art and being an artist takes bravery, courage, and a sense of crazy fearlessness. And when I started out as a theatre director, I don't think I was quite prepared on how challenging a journey it would be. And, you know, I think we all feel maybe as artists and directors that we're buffeted by different opportunities and mentors and experiences and what we're exposed to and who our collaborators are on the journey. And I'd love to know what your thoughts are around the role of the director, especially now when you're moving from freelance artists to an artistic role into a leadership role, but particularly your mentors and how the world around you has shaped you to be in the place you're in now.
Wow, that's a great question. The role of the director, I think, is a kind of flexible one. I think it's different for every project. For me, you're the person holding the reins in any given situation. So I think you have to be malleable in terms of being sensitive to who and what is in the room. So that means the kind of text it is. You know, it's different if it's a new text or if it's a tried and tested text, the kind of processes individual actors have. The main role for me, the starting point, I should say, is that you make sure that everybody is engaged in the same production and the same version of the piece of work that you're making. So it's very much about setting a roadmap. But then I think it has to be about enabling all the different artists that are in there with you to make their best work. So you have to be very aware and notice differences between how people work or tensions or energies in the room, and try and find a way to get everybody the time and the space to bring out their sort of best, the best of themselves. And I think that's the real challenge. It's not panicking. You know, when you start off, I know I certainly, when I started directing, I don't know how what your situation is, Selena, but I went in there with a very fixed, rigid process. And, you know, this is what we're going to follow to the nth degree. And this is how I want it to be. And I think with sort of time and experience, I discovered that I was robbing the production of some of the best opportunities for something really special, magical. And that moment between that group of people at that time and what that brings to a piece. So I've learned that I still need to do all the work in advance, but as long as I have that in my back pocket, I can be free to sit back and let other people's ideas flourish and let other people take the reins every now and then. And, you know, let it, I suppose, be what that specific project is in that moment. And I think that's the closest thing I can sort of say in terms of a similarity between being a director in the room and being the artistic director of an organization. It's the noticing where gaps are or what voice isn't being heard and trying to find a way of facilitating it, but facilitating it within a very structured, safe environment. But, you know, you can tell me more about that because you've already done that. So you know more, much more. I'd love some handy hints and tips.
Well, yeah. I think what you're saying in terms of the rehearsal room, just around being able to empower the artists and for it to be a collaborative process, for you to, as a director, to obviously prep, do all your homework, then bring that into the room and being able to let go of all those ideas at the same time. I think on the journey that we are all on, we're always perfecting that. We never know really from rehearsal room to rehearsal room, how things are going to evolve from day to day. Mm-hmm. And I think your point of being able to listen to a room, I think, is really key. Yeah. Around listening. And one of the great notes I was ever given from an actor was everyone has to understand how the breath of an actor works. Yeah. And I feel we go on this journey really very much in the dark. At times when you go into a rehearsal room, we're in a great position and a privileged position to be able to create work and work with great design teams and actors, and that you're really, in many ways, only as good as the people that you work with at all times. And I think what you're saying there about creating a safe environment is absolutely critical as a way to allow people to keep dreaming and creating magic.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you.
And I think the more that we spend in each other's rehearsal rooms as well, I think is really important. It's such a rare treat. One of the things I've really appreciate at the gate, which I never thought, never had the experience of, that I'd enjoy so much, is to be involved in other artists' work, previews, dress rehearsals, run-throughs. It's a great insight, and you learn every day doing that.
That's right. And, you know, the great thing is when you're in the room doing the work, to have somebody come in with an outside eye, with no knowledge of how you got to a moment or what you're driving at, to just get a kind of gut response. God, it's invaluable. It's absolutely invaluable. I mean, I've loved it already in the, you know, only in week two of the rehearsal process for the visiting hour. Even just the couple of conversations we've had and your thoughts about the play and what, you know, came to your mind, you know, things like Cordelia's speech and, you know, thinking around the visuals and the chandeliers and how we might use them. I mean, that's really invaluable, Selena. And I have to say, I haven't had that experience before. So I've really, really enjoyed it.
Well, I think you'll find this, if there was any tips, is that to be open to those conversations is hugely, it works both ways, Katrina. It's great to have someone to bounce off ideas, to keep interrogating, to keep asking questions, to keep curious about how artists work and the stories they want to tell, I think is one of the key reasons why, as freelancers moving into running institutions and programming and collaborating in that way, I think it's really a big, big part of the role.
Yeah, and it's true, because one thing I've learned over the years is, you know, when you bring an artist into the room and you may have ideas about how they work or who they are as a performer or as a designer, and you might have ideas about their methodologies or their thinking, you're constantly surprised when they're in the room with different personalities, and you can let go of any preconceived notions you have of anybody, because the dynamic between people is really the thing that changes the dynamics in a room and makes a rehearsal process completely magical. So that's a massive learning curve, I think, over years.
Totally. And I think we're still learning. We learn every day. And I think that's the beauty of the journey. Tell us a little bit about mentors in your life and the big influences on the journey to date.
So I haven't had formal mentors very much, except for when I did the Clower Fellowship. I had David Lann as a mentor through that process. And, you know, he's still somebody that I would contact and have conversations with. And he's an incredibly generous director. But what inspired me most about David is the way he thinks about theatre, about the function of theatre. There's a kind of purity around, you know, his taste and who he wants to work with. And I was always hugely inspired by how the Young Vic worked and how it supported emerging directors. So he was a very big influence on my thinking, but I never, for example, was his assistant director. We had very little conversation around the specifics of my work, even though he came to see some things in London. He made comments, but we didn't have full on conversations. So I've never had that kind of input into my working method. But I will say I have been very much inspired by people. Like, I did a course with Katie Mitchell. I don't know if you've ever come across A Gift to Anybody Who Wants to Be a Director, I believe is the Living Pictures training courses in directing in London, and they're, you know, they get lots of people to run workshops, and in my case I did a workshop for 2 or 3 weeks with Katie Mitchell at a kind of critical point in my career when I was trying to decide if directing was really for me, because initially I'd kind of fallen into it through, you know, I had started off as an actor and moved to London and had no patience to sit around and wait, and was part of a company and wanted to, you know, drive things forward. So I ended up directing because, well, it's a complicated, long story, but ended up directing things eventually on the fringe in London. And then I was trying to decide, is this really the path for me? So I went on this training course, and it was invaluable. And it's pure, it's very, very logical, and it's a lot of hard work, Katie Mitchell's process. It's very much based around Stanislavski, and it's very much based around a hell of a lot of kind of pre-work on the text and, you know, back histories and present tense action and, you know, all of the kind of standard Stanislavski thinking. But what it did for me was it taught me how to read texts, complicated texts, because this process, whether you're dealing with something like Not I or something like, I don't know, Juno and the Peacock, the process works and it gives you a way into a text, no matter what your relationship to the experience of the world is. And that was really, really invaluable. And also, I couldn't believe how much work she did. I got the shock of my life, how much work a director should be doing. Clearly, up to that point, I was doing none of it, winging it. That was the other kind of big wake up call. And the third thing that happened is she said to me, and I was working I won't say what it is. I was an associate director. I'd taken over from someone who had left the show, and it was a big touring, number one touring show, which is sort of big venues around London. And I was a little bit embarrassed about it, if I'm honest. And I was kind of, oh, I'm only doing this silly thing, you know. And she said to me, do you consider yourself an artist? And I went, oh, no, I'm a director. And she went, maybe you need to rethink directing. But no, she wasn't maybe that harsh. But the point she was making is, why are you treating this thing that you know, think you want to spend your life doing so casually and doing things you don't believe in? And what are you trying to investigate? What are you investigating as an artist? Because that's the only way you'll ever be a decent director. And I remember coming away from that, like it didn't happen immediately, but I never forgot the question. And now I would say, like, you know, I've been through a process where I think, yes, actually, I do feel like an artist, and I've come out the other side of that. And now I feel like I'm trying to be an artist, because I feel the investigation of the subject through the play is the pursuit of art. And I never feel, you know, none of us do, that we get there. So, but I'm much more comfortable with the idea of pursuing it than the idea of having reached the point, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes total sense. And that's a great story. That's a great story. Because I think if we ever reached the conclusion, if we ever got to the top of Everest, we wouldn't do it anymore.
No, I suppose.
And I think that's part of the curiosity, isn't it? It's part of that journey to understand deeper, go further, create the art, and transform. I mean, I feel very much it's about trying to transform people's lives through the stories that we tell. What are the stories that interest you as an artist?
I suppose they are hard stories about who we are as a species, and not simple, straightforward looks at who we are as a species, but kind of something that digs in underneath the obvious and has a complicated grey area. I don't like plays that tell us what to think. I like plays that ask us questions and make us engage with an idea. I think that's why we all get so drawn to the Greeks. There's, you know, and I suppose why I am particularly drawn to Marina Carr, because what those plays all do is they make you engage with something that is on the surface dark and negative, but when you dig into it, the reasons for that are always somebody trying to be human, trying to do their best and making a mistake. And, you know, it's so important for me at the moment. These stories are essential for me at the moment because of the way our society is going, because everything has become so, so binary. You're right or you're wrong. You agree or you disagree. You're this person or you're not. I find it utterly terrifying, and I find that we are in a position now where we need to remind ourselves that there is a whole scale of difference between right and wrong. And they can, I just find it terrifying the way we're being pushed into these polar opposite positions when we engage on anything on social media, anything in the news. You're forced into agreeing or disagreeing if you engage. And I don't know what that's going to do to us. I find it scary. And therefore, I find these plays that look at something that is apparently good and dismantle it, or apparently bad and question it, very, very interesting and very necessary.
And I think that's a really interesting point around the sort of or us all living in silos, because I think the role of the artist also has that need and, well, for me anyway, that desire to shine light into the darkest of corners.
Yes.
In order to reveal the truth.
Absolutely.
And you can't experience the dark without experiencing the light. And very much, as you say, twinned in Marina's work and twinned in the Greeks and twinned in the classics and twinned in a lot of different plays and storytelling. And but that's really where I think the tension and the drama is and always will be in ourselves and in the stories that we are sort of drawn to tell.
Yeah, and you know, and that's why we need our theatre back, because we need to sit in the soup, don't we? We need to be forced to sit there and hear all the different perspectives and look at it from different sides and put ourselves in different people's shoes and not switch it off after we've got the thing that agrees with the thinking we had, because everything is so fast now and we have to have a think, you know, have an opinion so quickly. We don't engage fully as much as we used to. Maybe now I'm just talking about myself, but that's my experience of conversations even.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think there's something around returning to that sacred theatre space where the grey areas can be explored and you sit shoulder to shoulder in the dark with other people.
Yes.
And you allow it, like osmosis almost, you allow the emotion and you allow the stories to sit with you. Because I think theatre is also about empathy. And we need more empathy in it than ever right now. This goes back to your point of the extremes and opposites. And we're such in conflict with each other that actually having time to see all the grey areas between us, the space between us, allows us to, I think, as you say, understand who we are, who we could be, where we should be going, like
yes.
The roadmap.
Absolutely, absolutely. I could not agree more. I couldn't agree more.
Let's have a chat about The Visiting Hour. It's
yes.
Your Gate stage debut before you move to the Abbey. I am absolutely delighted that you are directing it.
Oh, I'm over the moon.
Tell me a little about what attracted you to the play and how you're in a second week of rehearsals. How is it all going? And I know that you've done a good bit of work in the last year in terms of live streaming, other work, you've other projects, other stories, other plays, but how is it going for you?
I think it's going really well. I mean, we've done a week and this week we've had a bank holiday, so we're very early in the process. But I have to say it's a very joyful room to be in. I was drawn to it initially. Well, I am a sucker for Frank McGuinness, I have to say. We're from the same part of the world, and when I read him, he makes me laugh out loud. Like, he captures local people in Donegal and in his show better than most people. It's just gorgeous to work on a text that feels so local to me and familiar. So that was a big, you know, I was interested immediately. But this is a beautiful, subtle, delicate piece of writing. It's a father and daughter. And it's set in a nursing home. The father's inside, the daughter is outside. And it came from an experience. Frank was inspired by an experience he had where he went to visit a friend and was really taken. And this was before COVID. It was a year and a half, 2 years ago, actually. So it was just a while before COVID, I believe. And he was really taken by how somebody with dementia was being looked after in this nursing home, the care that was being taken. And then I think the images of seeing families not able to connect with their loved ones and seeing them outside windows and thinking about his experience and how these people would be confused and, you know, abandoned because of the necessities of the COVID regulations, just inspired this beautiful, delicate little simple play. Not simple at all, actually. I'm sure the actors would take the head off me for saying that, because it's quite complicated, as you can imagine, playing somebody with dementia and non sequiturs and thoughts coming, you know, from no connecting feed line is quite the challenge to learn, but they're doing really well with it and having a lot of laughs in the process.
And what's Stephen, it like with Stephen and Judith?
Well, they're great fun, and Stephen and Judith know each other from work in the past. So they have a lovely, lovely connection and energy. So, you know, they bring a lot. They don't let each other away with very much. They bring a lot of fun out of each other. So it's been really great for me getting to sit back and watch the fireworks they're having. You know, they have a lovely quality together. And, you know, as well, you know, they're so experienced, both of them. They've done so much, you know, but to see them sitting down, engaging with the basics of the simplest form, two people sitting down, talking to each other, you know, there's very little going on in terms of movement or, you know, anything obvious that you would normally see in a theatre production. It's just purely them, their relationship, and these words that Frank has written. It's gorgeous.
I think you absolutely got it right there in terms of the essence of sort of the purity of storytelling, so actor focused, so driven. It's really, I think, would be a joy to behold.
Yeah.
At a time when we're just needing stories that move us and shift us and allow us to think in different ways and feel that we are connected. Because I think, like you, and I think like so many of us, how much we miss that live experience. Mm,
yeah.
And what it's been like over the last year of everyone quite rightly trying different ways of reaching audiences and working with artists in different ways. How do you feel, obviously worked so much in the live space, this shift now into streaming and connecting through film and camera and screen as a way to tell these stories? Hopefully the live or new hybrid models will come back, but the live experience will be on our doorstep, we all hope, very soon.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the gifts is that when you have a camera, the levels of intimacy and quiet and connection between minutia in terms of what people are thinking and wanting to say and not saying, you know, the insight you get into that, putting a camera in someone's face is gorgeous. And it's a real gift for like a theatre director. I haven't made films or anything before, so pairing something down into that moment between two people has been a really interesting process for me in terms of my thinking around how to stage something. You know, I constantly find that I'm having a thought, oh, A could do this and B could do that, and then seeing it in the room and thinking, that's too big. A doesn't need to do anything. A only needs to think it, and it's there. So, and I think we will borrow some of that when we go back to live experiences, because we'll have that experience of what cameras can do. And I also think that, you know, we have a lot to be thankful for in terms of accessibility. When you think of people isolated in their own homes normally during normal times or, you know, standard times, then, you know, the idea that we could share stories with them, that they could access theatre, that there could be a streaming event available to them at any time of the year or in any circumstances is a really big opportunity, both for them to have access, but also for us to get to an audience. And I think that's something we will never pull back from.
I don't think we ever can.
And, you know, the whole process around even making something or auditioning online, Zoom rehearsals, design meetings on Zoom, I think it'll change the shape of the industry. And it might even, you know, help financially save money at certain times, because these things, these tools are available to us, and we have learned how to use them because we've had to use them for so long. we're now quite adept at having a meeting on Zoom. Like, you know, there is no way you would have thought you could have a design meeting on Zoom 2 years ago. So I think that there's a lot of things that will have a big impact on how we function. But, you know, I hope it's not too much of an impact. I don't think that anything can compensate for sharing the same air as the people you're making a piece of work with.
I would absolutely 100% agree.
And
on that, and on that note, Katrina, I would like to thank you for being part of the first Gate podcast.
Pleasure.
To say how much I am, and I hope many other people are looking forward to seeing The Visiting Hour later this month. And I hope as you take over the Abbey and you start programming, we will have every opportunity to hook up, share more stories, and help create a healthier, more stronger and exciting and inspiring theatre industry in this country.
Amen, Selena.
We will talk soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Amelia.